This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Among the many stories that were eclipsed by Trump's tweet storm over NFL players not standing during the anthem is how Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller's investigation into Trump is going. While the scoop of the investigation remains secret, bits and pieces of information are emerging that imply Mr. Mueller's inquiry is very broad. He is apparently looking into how Facebook's ads originating from Russia might have influenced last year's election, how Trump's former campaign chair Paul Manafort gave private briefings to a Putin ally, and what dealings Michael Flynn Jr. has had with his lobbying firm. Mr. Mueller is also reportedly interested in interviewing former cabinet members Sean Spicer and Reince Priebus. The news comes amid revelations that a Trump attorney named Michael Cohen in 2013 sent a letter to a Putin aide about the potential for building a Trump Tower in Moscow, and that a UAE crown prince visited the U.S. last December without the knowledge of the government to meet with Trump and his colleagues at Trump Tower in New York. Much of the mainstream media coverage is framed within the narrative of a vast Russian conspiracy to take over the U.S. government. Well, joining us for a more nuanced discussion is Marcy Wheeler. She's an independent journalist specializing in civil liberties, privacy, and the war on terror. She blogs at emptywheel.net, and she's a frequent guest on this program. Welcome back to the show, Marcy.
Always good to be on. Thanks.
So let's first begin with these revelations about the Facebook story. We covered the problem with Facebook and its ad sort of model separately. But what does it mean for the Facebook ads originating from Russia during the campaign last year? What does that mean for, what does it mean for Mr. Mueller to be looking into this? I mean, you know, this could just be a bunch of independent folks in Russia taking advantage of Facebook's ad policy.
Well, it's not independent per se. There's a troll farm, or that's what we call it, called Internet Research Association outside of St. Petersburg. And they are behind these ads that have been reported recently. So, and they're not all presidential related. Facebook, this started... Well, it goes back. So Mark Warner, who is the ranking member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, is convinced that it's a suspicion. He's convinced the Trump administration helped Russians with their targeting for social media. And he's focused on Facebook. And he's been saying since last fall that Facebook was pushing fake news. He has visited Facebook and said, you need to give more information. You need to keep looking for the advertisements for the ways in which Facebook has allowed Russians to press certain memes in the United States. And so thus far, Facebook has done all of this willingly. They haven't been ordered, as far as we know, by either the Senate Intelligence Committee or Robert Mueller to go look into anything. But they've done tremendous amounts of intelligence gathering on their own networks and come up with these 3,000 ads that were bought between 2015 and 2017. And most, according to Facebook, were not presidential related. They were things like opposing immigrant rights, both sides of the Black Lives Matter issue. And so they are believed to be better understood as heightening tensions within the United States than necessarily supporting or opposing one presidential candidate. Although Daily Beast did find some ads that were supporting rallies in Florida. And those are the most interesting. And the question is, you know, remember that Trump wasn't doing terrifically well. And then Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, brought in what's called Cambridge Analytica, which is this hocus pocus firm that uses Facebook to send dark marketing ads that other people don't see, in other words. And at the end of the campaign last year, they were like, this is why we won. We won because we were sending ads to people in Michigan to make them depressed and not turn out. And so we know that they value this marketing, this online marketing thing. Jared Kushner is the one who gets credit for it, rightly or not. And the question is, did that effort include collaborating with the Russians on similar kinds of things? Now, thus far, the volume is not, you'll see a lot of people online saying, well, here's how many impressions you could get out of those 3,000 ads, out of that $100,000 in ad spending. And that's true, but even the scope of what Trump and Hillary themselves paid for, setting aside PACs, that $100,000 is a drop in the bucket. I sort of describe it as throwing a couple matches on top of the bonfire, which is the great right-wing conspiracy media. And so it's not clear to what extent that is true.
Now, there's the Senate Intelligence Committee's investigations, the Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller's investigations. How do you explain where these two fall? Do they overlap? I understand they are talking to one another.
Well, they are talking to each other. They do overlap. The Senate Intelligence Committee is probably the most grown up of three congressional committee investigations. The most childish is the House Intelligence Investigation. Roger Stone appeared before them today. Remember that Devin Nunes leads that committee. He's supposed to be recused from this, but he keeps trying to undermine the investigation, even though he's supposed to be recused from it. So that's a mess. And then there's also a bit of an investigation in the Senate Judiciary Committee, which by all rights should be looking into it because the FBI director got fired as part of it. And so that one, I think, is being conducted in good faith, although, those two, the Senate Judiciary and the Senate Intelligence Committee, are now increasingly stepping on each other's toes because the Intelligence Committee would like to have kind of a monopoly on these investigations, and the Judiciary Committee, as they do on a lot of issues, are like, look, you know, this involves the FBI. The FBI director got fired, so of course we get to investigate this. So we'll see how that goes. But, the short version, the most interesting question of overlap to date involves Paul Manafort, who was Trump's campaign director during summer last year. And he came in as one of those corrupt lobbyists, influence peddlers that you find all over DC. But his most recent corrupt influence peddling involved the oligarchs in Ukraine who were closely tied to Russia. So he came in with that background. And he had been trying to limit his testimony to Congress, to the Senate Intelligence Committee. And the Judiciary Committee subpoenaed him, or threatened to subpoena him. This is during the summer. And he quickly agreed to go before the Senate Judiciary Committee on the day that he had appeared before the Senate Intelligence Committee. And that's when Robert Mueller's FBI agents raided his home and reportedly took instructions from his lawyer on how to deal with these congressional appearances. And so since then, Manafort has refused to go to Congress. So in other words, Manafort, who is easily the most likely person to be indicted in this investigation, there was something about his testimony to these two committees in Congress that Mueller was interested in. His house got raided. When his house got raided, he was told that he would likely be indicted. So it's unclear exactly what all is going down, but he's the guy who also was, as you said, giving briefings to a guy that he's had hot and cold running sordid consulting deals with. So that's where it gets really interesting.
There's also news that the Obama administration had a FISA warrant to wiretap Manafort before and after the election, but now we are finding out that warrant was not for real-time conversations, only stored communications. But this was, of course, well before the Mueller investigation began.
Well, okay, so two FISA orders. And FISA orders, as you suggested, can be either data in motion, so phone conversations and email conversations in motion, or they can be data, they can be physical searches. And under the guise of physical searches, that's what the government uses to go get stored emails. So if you have the data in motion, you're going to get ongoing phone calls. If you have the data at rest, you can go search a storage, like a storage unit, which reportedly may have happened, although that might be bad FISA reporting because people don't understand the distinction I just described. Or you can go and get what is in your email server, right? You can go get your Gmail box historically, or you can go and image a hard drive, right? That is a physical search. So what's interesting about that is the first one, as far as we know, was both kinds, the data in motion, data at rest. And that stopped being renewed. That one was tied to Manafort's ties to the Ukrainian oligarchs. Wasn't renewed, wasn't being productive. After his involvement in the campaign, there was another one. And that's the one that, as you said, was reportedly just a data at rest one, a stored physical search one. And so even there, it's unclear whether they just wanted to go search a closet or they wanted to go image his hard drives, right? And what's further interesting about that is once you have a FISA order against you as an American, hopefully neither you nor I, but Paul Manafort, once you have an order against you, when you travel overseas, you don't need to get a separate order when you travel overseas to be surveilled overseas. That sort of makes sense. But what people don't understand about that is the Attorney General can do it. You don't have to go before the FISA court again. But what people don't understand about that is that means once you're overseas, the government starts using its EO12333 standards, they're not going to Google anymore. They're going hardball, right? So they're gonna go and they're gonna hack your computer. And that's interesting, A, because we know that Paul Manafort travels overseas a ton. But it's also interesting because this is a part of FISA that has been really problematic in recent years, and that just in April, they had to redo how they do 702, which is a better known part of FISA, because of how badly they were screwing up what happens when Americans go overseas. And so that's actually really interesting because the Paul Manafort order, the second one, the first one would clearly be in the scope of this problematic time period, but the second one probably would be as well. And so I find it interesting because you don't know, like what was happening was very serious violations of FISA. And it does raise questions about whether the order pertaining to Paul Manafort had those same problems. And if it did, then things are going to get interesting on the FISA front.
Let's turn to this issue of a potential Trump Tower Moscow. In 2013, reportedly, a Trump lawyer, former lawyer by the name of Michael Cohen, he was his lawyer in 2013, sent a letter to a Putin ally about being interested in a Trump Tower Moscow. Cohen is going to be testifying before the Senate Intelligence Committee next month about this. He's claiming this was just a real estate deal. There was nothing more about it. Trump himself even tweeted about it in 2013. But why is this potentially interesting? Why would this be within this? Why is the Senate Intelligence Committee interested in this?
Okay, the deal, the guy that you're talking about is a guy by the name of Agalarov, who is the same guy who helped Trump bring Miss Universe or whatever it is to Moscow in 2013. And that's interesting because that guy, Agalarov, is the guy who set up the meeting on June 9th, 2016 in Trump Tower. Okay, so that's one strand of it, which Paul Manafort and Jared Kushner and Don Jr. were at.
So that's the same person.
Well, that guy, the 2013 guy, is tied to that June meeting at Trump Tower. In 2015, a guy by the name Felix Sater, who has been an FBI informant and has long had ties to the Russian mob, he and Cohen were together trying to work a different deal for a different Trump Tower in Russia. And frankly, the Russians weren't all that interested because the deal wasn't that good for Russians, but they thought they had a deal in place. So November of 2015, Trump is already running for president, and two of his close lackeys are setting up this deal whereby Russians will set up a new Trump Tower and they'll borrow the Trump brand, and that'll go through just as Trump is running for president. And what's interesting about that, among many other things, is that Felix Sater, when he was talking about it with Cohen in 2015, he some for some reason that no one has yet explained was tying that to Trump getting elected. So he was sort of saying to Cohen, if we can get Putin to buy off on this, if we can get Putin to do all the approvals for this, then we're going to get Trump Tower. And oh, by the way, Trump is also going to be elected president.
So the brand will be worth more? I mean, was that the implication?
Well, it's unclear.
Yeah.
And so, so Sater was saying to Cohen, we need to get Putin involved. Here's the guy who's running it. And to Cohen, he says, can you call this dude? Dmitry Peskov, who's a really close, he is a government functionary, very close to Putin. Can you call this guy? And Cohen reportedly only called the kind of public line, so he says, and that ended it. And there's a lot of reason to be skeptical or question about that, because everyone hid that fact, for one, but also because in the famous dodgy dossier, the Steele dossier that everyone talks about, Cohen is the guy you always hear about him having flown to Prague and had this meeting with people. He denies having flown to Prague, but doesn't necessarily deny, you know, whatever. I mean, he denies a lot of things, but his denials are very carefully couched. And he doesn't usually address this earlier conversation where he tried to reach out to Dmitry Peskov. And what's interesting about that is the dossier claims that Cohen and Peskov were the two people who were kind of negotiating this coordination between Trump and Russians. I think there's a lot of reasons to question the dossier. To question the dossier is we've gotten it. But nevertheless, the newest, the 2015-2016 Trump Tower deal, which Cohen says he backed out of in January 2016, but that deal puts Cohen and Peskov in some kind of communication together. And if it went any further than what we know, then all of a sudden you're into areas where Cohen is talking to Peskov, which is what the dossier sort of alleges, and B, where Felix Sater, for some reason, believes that setting up Trump Tower in Moscow is going to have some impact on Trump winning the election. So again, these are all just threads, both the June 2016 meeting with Aguilar, Aguilar's representative, he wasn't at the meeting, but that meeting, the earlier Trump Tower deal, those are threads. None of them is a smoking gun yet, but they are more interesting threads than we started this investigation with.
Let's go back to one of the first things that Trump was under investigation around, which was his firing of James Comey, the former FBI director. We also now know that Robert Mueller, the special prosecutor, is interested in Sean Spicer's notes. While Sean Spicer was press secretary at the White House, he apparently kept very detailed notes. And there's a lot of interest in whether or not there was an obstruction of justice, whether or not Trump fired Comey because he was trying to stymie an investigation of him. And apparently Trump might have even told Russian diplomats during his meeting at the White House that that's why he fired Comey. Could this be more of a smoking gun?
Right. So there's the underlying question of whether Trump's people and Russia were the word used is colluded, which you shouldn't use. It's whether they were coordinating. Mm. So there's that underlying investigation, walking back and forth with the Russians about what might happen with the election. Trump fired Comey in large part because Comey didn't back off of the Mike Flynn investigation. So Mike Flynn, remember, met with Sergei Kislyak, the ambassador to the United States, and wasn't honest about that and was kind of talking about sanctions ahead of time. And so Trump fired Comey because Comey wouldn't back off that investigation. And we know, by the way, that Mueller's investigation has asked the White House for details, not just of Comey's firing, but also of Flynn's firing. And there's the question is, did Trump fire Comey specifically to thwart the Russia investigation? And there's a lot of, as you said, there's the what he said to the Russians, where he said, you know, I've got that trouble out of my hair. There's whatever Sean Spicer was witness to. There was Trump's involvement of writing up the statement about that June 9th, 2016 meeting. He kind of intervened and said, oh, it was just about adoptions. It had nothing to do with giving us dirt on Hillary Clinton, which we know it did. So there's a lot of reasons to believe that Trump was obstructing the was trying to thwart the investigation by firing Jim Comey. And then the question becomes, well, why would he do that? Why was it so important to end the investigation into Mike Flynn such that he had to fire Jim Comey and cause himself all other manner of trouble? And it is trouble. And I mean, and the other interesting thing, as you said, about Sean Spicer, he is being asked to turn over his very voluminous notes. But also there was a report in Axios that they said, well, people are going to regret not being nicer to Sean Spicer because he kept very detailed notes and he was in a lot of meetings. So Spicer, right, has been thrown overboard by the Trump administration, and he was witness to a lot of these issues, including Trump's, you know, basically what happened with the firing of Comey is like, I got to get rid of Comey. Having decided that, he brought in Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general, and Jeff Sessions, and said, hey, write up why we should get rid of Comey, as if that was the excuse to fire him. So Sean Spicer was in that loop, as well as many others, and probably, if he hasn't already, will be talking at some length with the Mueller investigation.
And in fact, Mueller has also apparently asked for phone records aboard Air Force One, where Spicer was and might have made some statements ahead of the Comey firing. So much to talk about, Marcy Wheeler. Thank you for keeping track of all these complicated threads and helping us make sense of them. I'm sure we'll have you back on again in the future. Thanks for joining us.
Great. Thanks.
My guest is Marcy Wheeler, an independent journalist specializing in civil liberties, privacy, and the war on terror. She blogs at emptywheel.net, and we've been discussing the latest in Robert Mueller and the Senate's investigation into the Trump administration. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign on for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.